Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Tuesday, November 27, 2018. South Sudan government launched a three-year development plan.
The National Development Plan 2011 to 2013, I believe, and the current National Development Strategy, they are good documents. But if they are not implemented, they are worthless. They don't even deserve the paper on which they have been written.
And the governor of Jonglei State imposed a curfew.
It's a control of the security of the town after the killing of the three policemen by armed civilians. An indication of how bad the spread of the small arms in the hands of civilians is affecting the law enforcement.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan Ministry of Finance announced a national development strategy to restructure their government, invest in building roads and other physical infrastructure. The strategy also requires the government to resettle some of the hundreds of thousands of persons displaced by the conflict back to their homes over the next 3 years. Some lawmakers are skeptical the plan will work. Manyang David Mayar has more for VOA from Juba.
The 70-page National Development Strategy notes the country spent 10 times more on its military than any other country in the Sub-Saharan region between the years 2008 and 2015. The document says when the government spent 13% of its gross domestic product on buying weapons, very little money was left over to develop the country. South Sudan Finance and Economic Planning Minister Salvatore Grangma Burdit says that time is over.
We have been without a national strategic document to develop since the period of South Sudan Development Plan, which was on 2013. It was for the period of 2011 to 2013. The NDS is therefore a very important instrument to convince the people that we are now back as one people.
Minister Maburdit says the revitalized peace agreement requires the government to come up with a development strategy that consolidates peace and at the same time stabilizes the economy. The new development plan requires that by 2021, the government establish a 40% increase in security, a 30% improvement in stability in commodity prices in the market, a 50% increase in service delivery, 80% improvement in food security, and a 70% return of refugees and displaced persons. The document says the lack of strong governance capacity since 2005 has been acknowledged by both the government and partners and is widely considered as a major contributing factor to the political and humanitarian crisis facing the country. Some lawmakers say they agree with the points made in the development plan but doubt it will be implemented. One of them is Lual Deng, a member of parliament in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, who also heads the Ebonu Center for Research.
The National Development Plan 2011 to 2013, I believe, and the current National Development Strategy, they are good documents. But if they are not implemented, they are worthless. They don't even deserve the paper on which they have been written. So what should be different is to go back to basics. I think you need a public investment program, PIP, where each and every project entering into the budget has to be subjected to what we call economic analysis.
Deng says if an entry doesn't meet technical, economic, environmental, and social criteria, it should be dumped. Lawmaker David Mayo, who chairs the Finance and Economic Planning Committee in the Transitional National Legislative Assembly, says the strategy will work when South Sudan becomes stable politically.
I believe in realism. Realism is the science of nation building and is the science of international politics. Good politics equals to good economics, not the other way around.
Maburdit says national ministries will be required to form their budgets from the National Development Strategy. He says funding will come from oil and non-oil revenues. Maburdit says In order to meet the goals and objectives of the National Development Strategy, there must be a good governance that eradicates corruption and enables the allocation of public resources to respond to priority needs such as security, food security, health, and education. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayer in Juba.
Authorities in Jonglei State have imposed a curfew in the capital, Bor. The governor of Jonglei State says joint operation forces have been ordered to arrest anyone found moving on the streets of the capital between 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. Deng Gai Deng has the story for VOA from Bor.
Announcing the curfew on Monday, Jonglei State Governor Pili Vagwir warned all civilians in Bor Town to be off the streets by 11 at night after the murders of police officers.
It's a control of the security of the town after the killing of the three policemen by armed civilians. And that was an indication of how bad the spread of the small arms in the hand of civilians is affecting the law enforcement. The three policemen were killed on duty. One was going to arrest the culprits, and the other two were ambushed by the armed youth.
Agur says joint operation forces are ordered to arrest illegal drug users or any civilians carrying arms.
There are youngsters that are drug addicted. They drink hashish, they drink shisha at night, and they are at the corners of criminalities. There are certain corners in the town where armed gangsters group at night. So this is what we want to control. Second to that, we want to arrest, apprehend all the culprits of the police killing. And this is what is happening. We wanted our people to welcome Christmas and celebrate Christmas in peace and in harmony.
The commander of the Joint Operations Forces, Brigadier General Jiel Manguk, says since the curfew went into effect yesterday, forces have arrested 85 suspected criminals. He says most of those arrested are soldiers and drug addicts. While some residents welcome the curfew, others are skeptical, saying security forces are harassing civilians, especially women, claiming they are dressed indecently. Aguirre flatly denies police or soldiers are harassing women.
There's no anything concerning. Even if you want to go naked, it's not part of the rule. So it's just a creation. But dressing is up to individuals. Whatever you want to wear, it is up to you. So yesterday when we received the rumors, the commanders of the operation went around and they have found that the soldiers are disciplined and they are abided by the rule.
25-year-old Bo resident Agul Samuel likes the town's new curfew.
I hope the law, if it is going to continue from town, then it will reach the other states, the other counties that the law have not reached. So I am supporting the step that have been undertaken by the states, by the state authorities.
But Samuel says some police officers and soldiers are not following the law.
During the daytime, they go to the town. They even capture those who have bad dressing codes, because these days we have many dressing styles. Like the ladies, when they put on the trouser, they take the scissors and they turn the trouser.
Other residents are urging the Jonglei State authorities to extend the curfew to villages, especially those along the Juba Bo Road, where unknown gunmen have seriously wounded and even killed several commuters over the past month. For VOA News, I am Deng Gai Deng in Bor.
The SPLM-IO shadow governor for Kapoita State, who was released recently from detention at the National Security Services headquarters in Juba, says there are many political detainees still being held in the facility. Marco Lokidir Lochapio says there are around 200 people locked up at the Blue House. Lokidor says President Salva Kiir should pardon the detainees so they can join their families, adding that some detainees were falsely accused of criminal acts.
The charges, their level 1, may is that I am the Iowa governor for Capote State, and I've been mobilizing hundreds and thousands of the population of Capote State, Eastern Equatoria, which comprises the Posa, the Latom, the Gs, Puyas, and the Dinka people to overthrow government of Salva Kiir, Mayardit. And another charge was that I was about to capture Kapeda, to come to capture Nadapal, Nahus, and Kapeda towns from the government. So those are the charges. These are those ones. I also say that in my presence in Kakuma, that I have been mobilizing the whole population in South Sudan to rejoin my military camp so that they can go to down up to the my camps where we opened so that they can now fight the government. So that was the charges.
I know that when you were released, you thank the government for releasing you. Why are you in Khartoum?
So I came for a medical checkup. So once I'm through with it, and then we see the next what to do for at least for the family.
We hear all sorts of stories from people who have been in the Blue House. Your story is quite different. You're saying you were not treated badly and only that you were not allowed to do certain things. Could you tell me what other detainees have been telling you at the Blue House?
Now the situation is very hard for all the detainees actually to have the life like before. Those of Carbino, Awol, is still inside. Those of the Capita, they have Ajak, is also still inside. And plus some, and plus many others who are still inside. So what I wish for the government really, since we have the peace, we find a peace agreement. So for those who have been actually accused due to the political issues must be released in order for them also to rejoin their families and also to have take part in the stakeholders in peace agreement implementation.
How many people are in that place?
Yeah, those who are inside there, I left them, there are almost 200 people.
And these 200 people, are they all rebels or what kind of people are they?
Yeah, there are so many people have been accused due to billion issues. Some they have the military issues within the national security. And there are some cases that are different, but all of them, they are there. They really need to be actually, you know, supported. They have to come out. So the government has to free them so that they can join their families and their parents. So like Carbino emphasized a bit for His Excellency the President, he has to pardon Carbino because Carbino, he's a business guy. Doesn't have anything linked with the government issue. He went to overthrow the government. At the same time, Carbino also is a member of national security. I don't think he will plan, and he has low rank of the captain, and he can plan for such a thing. So that's what gets rumors. So he was detained because of rumors. He has to be free.
And what is your next move now? You're the shadow governor of SPLM for Kapoita. You're saying you're going for treatment and you're not even talking about Kapoita anymore. What's going on?
Yeah, well, now we have the peace agreement. So I will be part of the delegation, or maybe the committee that will go for comprehensive peace dissemination. So I will be part of them, and I will go to Kapoita and meet the Kapoita people and try to preach the word of peace so that everyone understands the speech.
That's Marco Lokidor Lachopio, the SPLM IO shadow governor of Kapoita State. He was speaking with me yesterday from Khartoum. You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, we look at the benefits of early breast cancer detection. Stay tuned for that story coming up next.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
how many languages do you speak? Swahili is a major. Then I speak in my mother tongue. Then I speak Arabic. Then I speak official language, which actually is English. Yeah, that is the full language which I really speak and write and communicate.
I speak my local language, which is Zande language, some simple Arabic, English, and some little Luganda.
I can speak almost 5 languages. My language, Kuku, Swahili, Madi, Arabic, but it's somehow, but can help me. Even English is not fluent, but can help me a bit.
One is English, second is Arabic, and then local language from Luo language, and then Dinka language.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus, and it's time for our Tuesday health segment. Today we are talking about early breast cancer detection. After a diagnosis of breast cancer, many women have surgery followed up by chemotherapy and radiation. But a new study shows that if it's caught earlier enough, women might be able to avoid the chemotherapy. VOA's Carol Pearson has more from Washington.
Since she was diagnosed with breast cancer last April, Amy Adam values family time even more.
It kind of, you know, made us aware that, you know, when it comes down to it, family is what matters.
Adam was lucky. A mammogram caught her cancer early, when the tumor was just 3 by 4 millimeters, smaller than the size of a pencil eraser. Her treatment, a lumpectomy followed by radiation.
No chemo. Did not have chemo.
Dr. Emily Albright is a surgical oncologist at the University of Missouri Healthcare. She says more women with early-stage breast cancer may be able to skip chemotherapy. A study published in the New England Journal of Medicine shows that genetic testing can determine the likelihood of the cancer returning. The study found women with a low risk of the cancer recurring did not benefit from chemotherapy. Women with a high risk of recurrence do better with chemotherapy. But Albright says doctors didn't know how to advise women in the mid-range.
The recent results have clarified that for women at intermediate risk of recurrence, the majority of those do not benefit from chemotherapy.
With genetic testing, doctors can determine the likelihood of a woman's cancer returning. Most people know that nausea, hair loss, and fatigue result from chemotherapy. But chemotherapy can also cause heart and nerve damage. Albright says the results of this study will help many patients whose breast cancer is caught early.
As we learn more about the biology, we're able to tailor treatments to the specific type of tumor that a patient has. So there are some small tumors that may be more aggressive, and there may be some larger tumors that are less aggressive.
Screening was key in catching Amy Adams' cancer. Mammograms can detect a lump 2 years before a woman can even feel it. Adams said it was a huge relief not to have to undergo chemotherapy. Because of this study, more women will be able to get treated without the negative side effects of chemotherapy. Carol Pearson, VOA News.
It kind of, you know...
Jack Deng Chenkou, a South Sudanese journalist based in Victoria, Australia, has reported on the issue of child brides after VOA reported about a Facebook post in which a girl was advertised as going to the highest bidder. Chenkou spoke with some of the men who competed for the South Sudanese girl.
First of all, we have reported on this story, but the headline on CNN was a bit confusing to me because when they said that the family used Facebook to auction the girl out, there was misplacement of some words there because the photo that first circulated on social media was not posted by a member of the family, according to the sources and according to our own analysis.
So then what role did Facebook play? Because the way that it's being reported right now is that there was a auction on Facebook.
That is a very surprising thing. And I remember I have read a lot of posts from some people And after the portal, I remember the portal, the first portal, that is a portal of Nyalong, this young girl, and one of the state parliamentarian, his name is called Bola Yom, who is actually, I've seen some media organization quoting him as the husband, but he's not. A lot of people took went into this and start posting their own suggestion, opinions about what they think, whether they want to be part of it. And then now coming in, the civil rights of the community is a civil rights organization also started to come in with their own argument as well. So it was a bit of, there was a lot of different communication going on between those who support the idea, those who don't support it, and those who are trying to be sarcastical about the situation.
Now, you spoke to the deputy governor, who was one of the three men who wanted her hand in marriage. Is that right?
Yep.
And what did he tell you?
I challenged the governor, or the deputy governor, on the basis that I have used the context that the girl was 17 years old, and I was asking him whether he understands the implications of marrying a 17-year-old, yet he is the deputy governor. He agreed that internationally, yes, it is not acceptable, but culturally, he believed that he proposed that this young girl was supposed to go to school. That is according to him. But the girl was not in school. So the girl was already at an age where she have a choice now to be married. That's when he joined, according to him. Another controversial thing is that is the culture in this. There is a controversial part of the Dinka culture don't mention when the girl is supposed to be married. And that is the most complex thing. And that's why you find that there are a lot of child marriages happening from 16, 17, and to 18. So that is where he actually used the tradition and the cultural perception to base his argument.
Speaking as a journalist, do you think that the media does a good job of reporting on these issues and, you know, just really articulating the intricacies of something like a dowry?
The role of the media, like I reported on this. I have reported on this and I will always try to report on this. But it would make sense if they put some perspective into this. Because you may end up actually causing a lot of problems. Like, for example, now the reporting on CNN or even the reporting that I... Take example, when I reported on this issue, somebody attacked me and said, why did you try to talk about this? And I said, look, I have the angle to report it. I understand what I'm reporting. But if it come out like the girl was auctioned, it trigger some people and they can easily react differently, but I personally...
Why do you think that word triggers people?
The word is that it is now portraying as if girls are being... the girl was put on Facebook and then asking people to come, like, you know, auction, dilal in the Sudanese term. Dilal is where you take your cow to the market and then you start calling people, it is 100, it is 200, it is 300, and then now whoever wins, take over. That is not how it happens.
That was Jack Deng Chanko, a journalist in Victoria, Australia, speaking to Ayen Bior. Tomorrow we speak to a member of the Lake States community where the family of the child bride resides. Some villagers in one of Zimbabwe's direst areas are appealing for food and fear their livestock, their source of livelihood, will die due to lack of water. As Columbus Mavunga reports for VOA from the region, the World Food Program is asking for funds to ensure food stability during the country's lean season.
In the dry Matabeleland region, animals are not only a sign of wealth, but a source of livelihoods. They are sold or exchanged for grain, especially corn, to prepare Zimbabwe's main staple food, sadza or isichwala, a thick porridge which is served with a relish. Crops usually fail due to low rains, so they depend on domestic animals. Standing next to a dry well which they had dug to get water for their cattle, 29-year-old Mpumelelo Dungen fears for his head. This year's drought has been severe. Our cattle are dying because there's not enough water to drink. We travel long distances for cattle to survive. We are appealing to the government to intervene and solve our water problem and food as well. It must fix our dam so that we can survive. We want food and water for us and our cattle to survive. The villagers in this Gacheni Matopo area say the Marigwe Reservoir dried up, leaving them with no reliable source of water for their animals. 60-year-old Lina Mutlanga says she now walks for hours upstream with her cattle to find water. The donors keep saying they will come and fix the dam, Marigwe Reservoir, but they are not coming. There's no one who has come to fix it. So when the water is finished here, we have to go further down there for the cattle to get something to drink. The World Food Program says it needs about $75 million to ensure food stability for Zimbabwe's lean season for the next 6 months for dry places like Gacheni Matopo. Eddie Rowe, the WFP director in Zimbabwe, told VOA that about 2.4 million people in this southern African nation need food aid because of unusually long dry spells experienced during the last rainy season.
As we speak, we know that almost in every district, most of these households have run out of their harvest. And now they depend on the market. And we all know the problems we are facing with not just availability of commodities, but the prices in purchasing these basic commodities.
USAID's Food for Peace program has given $22 million to the WFP to ease Zimbabwe's food insecurity. As a result, places like Gacheni Matopo in Matabeleland probably will get decent meals. Columbus Mavunga for VOA News, Harare.
That report by Mavunga brings us to the end of our show for this Tuesday. We now leave you with the song Bonseke by a Ghanaian artist, Castro. We have been listening to the song Bone Shaker with the artist Castro. I'm John Tanza in Washington. Thanks for being part of us this evening. We would like to know what you think about this show. Our email is southsudan@voanews.com. If you are living the town where there is no VOA FM, continue to listen to us on shortwave. Our frequencies are 11850 kilohertz, 13865 kilohertz, and 15180 kilohertz. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.